Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to PhillyFanatics.com's Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. With me, Gordon Glantz and Josh Landsberg. And we are coming here to you today off a 24-23 Eagles loss that could have easily been an Eagles victory. We'll start with Gordon. Give me two things that went wrong today.
Well, what went wrong today? Two things are just so obvious. I don't want to steal anybody else's thunder, but the defense that has been so stellar. I mean, Detroit had three possessions in the first half, and they get touchdowns on all three of them. Dominate the time of possession, which is again had been something the Eagles had been doing, and you know they dominate. They drive right down the field, and you know even if the Eagles had gotten one. You know, one of those possessions held them to three instead of seven. You know, it would have been a different outcome. And then just the penalties. I mean, the penalties were so lopsided. I believe it was something like 14 penalty flags to two. You could argue some of the penalties on the Eagles were not fair, and I think that's a fair argument, even looking at it objectively, which is hard to do in Eagleville. But, you could say, you know, you could. There were some things you saw Detroit do that maybe could have been flagged that weren't, but still, that goes. A lot of it isn't that way. A lot of it goes to discipline. You know, the penalty the Eagles had for, you know, they had two penalties for, you know, the clock ran out and the play clock and that kind of thing. You just can't have those things happen. I know it's tough on the road, rookie quarterback. Hard to hear, dome stadium, all those things. But, you know, the penalties and the defense just really not being the defense that we grew accustomed to in the first three games really are two major things. I mean, you could point to this play, that play. I mean, we could be here all day with a bunch of other things that went wrong, but those are the main things.
And we'll get more specific as we go along, just in general. Those first penalties, you're right, Gordon, 14 penalties, 111 yards. And the drives in that first half were 75, 80, and 75 yards. Three passing touchdowns against a team that hadn't given up a passing TD in the first three games. So quite a change. Josh, how about you? Two things that went wrong today.
Yeah, I'll give you two different ones. I think Gordon definitely hit on two big ones right there. The two for me would be on the fumble recovery in the second half, then not scoring a touchdown there and only getting 3 points there, I think was a big – problem there. It was 21-17, and the Eagles could have gone up 24-21. Instead, they made it 21-20 with the field goal. And I think if they score a touchdown there, they put themselves in a great position to win the game, but they only get three. But then at the same time, even getting those three, they do get the field goal later to go up 23-21, and then that leads to my second problem with why they lost the game. So if one of these two things doesn't happen, they win the game. Either they get the touchdown there, they win the game, or Ryan Matthews doesn't fumble at the end of the game. That would have sealed the victory for them also if they pick up the first down there and they're able to run out the rest of the clock. I think it was a bad play call by Doug Peterson, actually, you know, pitching it to him. I think that was a bad play call. They should have actually thought on second down. They should have done something that Detroit wouldn't have been expecting. I know, you know, conventional wisdom says you run the ball there, but I actually would have done a play action play where I play fake the run and I throw a bomb, try to take a chance on second two. Because even if you make an incomplete pass, it's third and two and you can still come back with a run or a short pass and try to pick up the first down. Whereas if you throw the bomb, you could score a touchdown there potentially or get, you know, to within field goal range and really seal the deal and win the game that way. So I think it was poor play calling toward the end of the game by Doug Peterson. He's done a great job all year, but I think at the end, those last the play calling down by the end zone where the Eagles were in the red zone and they could have scored a touchdown there, the play calling there wasn't great, and then the play calling at the end of the game wasn't great also. So those are my two things.
Good points, Josh. And that series early in the second half, the Eagles come out and score right away, cut it to 21-17. You're right, Matthew Stafford fumbles, and the Eagles take over the 16-yard line, have to settle for a field goal. And there weren't drops, but there were two catchable balls there for Aguilar and Green Beckham was
Beckham,
the other one.
Beckham,
Green
Beckham.
Yeah.
I thought Beckham
so,
should have caught that.
Yeah, I can't say the guy did his hand in there, but they were catchable. I'll say that. That guy's about a foot shorter than he is, and he could have shielded him a little better, too, keep him getting his hand there. And Josh, since you brought up the fumble, certainly that was the big mistake there at the end. And the announcers pointed this out during the broadcast. Ryan Matthews had the ball in the wrong hand. He's making a run toward the right sideline. He's got to have that ball out in his right on the outside arm, not on the inside arm. And that's, you know, so there were just too many mistakes. Eagles certainly could have won this game, but there were too many mistakes. Gordon, do you have any more specific? I know we've done the general ones. Kind of, was there anything specific you saw that cost them this game?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was something we're not used to seeing here with the Eagles, going back to Andy Reid, and also, you know, Chip Kelly wasn't great with time management either. But, you know, they had all three timeouts, the Eagles, and even though they fell behind, they were able to leave themselves a lot of time on the clock. You know, at the end of the game, and you know, I know what they were. You know, Carson Wentz took a shot and threw a bomb, and you know, he I guess he put a little too much air under it, because apparently people are saying Aguilar had a step on the guy initially, and you know, maybe, you know, I know Peterson was saying in the post game press conference, maybe you get an interference call there. You know, a lot of things could happen if you just take that shot, but the worst possible thing could happen, and you know, when you throw deep, that's the risk you run. That, you know, the percentages go down on something successful happening. And I just think with, you know, time left, a lot of time left, even without timeouts, you only need a field goal against a defense that's not stellar. And you have the right weapons. I mean, you have Sproles, you have Ertz, you have Jordan Matthews. I mean, you have guys you could just, you know, get the ball to and work your way down the field and get out of bounds. And if you get a first down, maybe spike the ball and work themselves into position to at least try a field goal at the end of the game. And I just, so obviously they kind of played that. You didn't want to fall behind, but they kind of played it well with the timeouts and, you know, held Detroit to 3 instead of letting them score 7, put themselves in a position there and just kind of, you know, throwing long. You know, I guess if he took a shot, he took a shot, and that you're going to say, well, he's a gunslinger mentality and that kind of thing. But, you know, I'd like to have that play back and just try to work down the field and see what would have happened and see if we still could have pulled that game out.
Yeah, just to be clear, the Eagles had used their timeouts on defense, right, Gordon? But they only the Lions only used 14 seconds because of that. And Gordon,
right.
I'll throw you one more. You mentioned the weapons the Eagles have that they maybe could have used to get down that field, and you have Caleb Sturgis, a guy who's kicked a 49 and a 50-yard field goal already in that game, and both of them were down the center, and you know, and with plenty of leg, and I don't, you know, so you didn't have to get too close.
Right, you're in a dome. You're in a dome. You're not dealing with weather. I mean, you didn't need to get too far down the field. So, yeah.
And one of those field goals looked like it could have. Yeah, one of those field goals looked like it could have been good from 60. So, yeah, they could have had a chance there.
Yeah, he had pretty good distance on both, and like you're right, Josh, one of them for sure. Josh, let's do a little comparison here. Let's get, you know, this is the second straight year they've lost in Detroit. Last year, 45-14, the Thanksgiving massacre, that I'm not even sure the game was that close, 45-14, and it was, you know, really signaled the beginning of the end for Chip. They'd gotten blown out by Tampa Bay the week before, and then they get blown out by the Lions. Which feels worse, but getting blown out like they did last year, or losing a winnable game today by 1 point?
Well, for me, I'm always pretty depressed after an Eagles loss, no matter how it happens. But I think you can't compare. I mean, last year was just, I think, so much worse. I mean, this team has started out so well at 3-0. A lot of people had them at best 2-1. A lot of people even had them 1-2. So I think that, you know, there was so much excitement in this town, and they thought they were going to win this game. But in people that I was talking to before this game, they were a little bit worried about Detroit, actually. Even though they're a 1-3 team, they started out 1-0 and then lost 3 in a row. They're a team that's desperate for a win, and it's in Detroit, and they're an underdog, and they got something to prove. So I think this was a game where some people were actually expecting the Eagles might have a little bit of a letdown because maybe the bye came a little bit too early and in the season, and even though Andy Reid was so great after the bye, winning pretty much every game after the bye, and Doug Peterson is his protege. But I think that it was a situation where last year Detroit wasn't, wasn't expected to win that game. The Eagles were expected to win, and coming off a loss, I think just getting shellacked last year feels worse because it really hurt their playoff chances. And it was later in the year, as you mentioned, it was Thanksgiving, and this is this is early enough in the year. I actually said after this game, you know, watching with the, you know, my family and stuff like that, that I'd rather them lose a game like this early on in the season than later on in the season. You want to be peaking toward the end of the season, you know, when playoffs come around, and to maybe have a letdown loss like this. Who knows? Maybe they end up, you know, beating Washington next week on the road, and then maybe even surprising some people and beating the Vikings at home. So you never know what can happen after a loss. It can sometimes motivate a team even more.
Josh, I'm going to steal your angle that you usually bring up, and I will say that, right, the line was only 3 points, which scared me a little bit. And that I almost made them my best pick of the week, my best bet, and then I backed off and saying, why is this line only 3 points? And
yeah, they should have been, a bigger favorite probably, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of Winnington. It scared me a little bit. I still had them as a top pick, but it scared, not the top pick. It scared me off making them the top pick. Gordon, Josh took me there a little bit. Well, actually, I'll save that for Josh. I'm going to come back to that. Let me ask you about Carson Wentz, because if there was a positive in this game, and the defense played much better in the second half, I think held the Lions with 3 first downs, you know, a couple of those turnovers. If it weren't for the Matthews fumble, the Eagles may have been able to run out the clock, or certainly could have taken it, you know, maybe didn't make the first down. They would have punted, and Lions would have a long way to go, and they only had, I think, 2 first downs at that point in the second half. But Carson Wentz has been a big story this year. Gordon, how did Carson Wentz play today?
I mean, again, you take away that throw, and you can't really knock somebody on one throw. That's his first interception at the tail end of his fourth game. I thought he played really well. I mean, I you know, he completed a high percentage of his passes again, and, you know, he's been struggling. If he's been struggling anywhere, it's been in the red zone. And, you know, he was able to connect, you know, the touchdown pass to Huff in the red zone and the touchdown pass to Matthews in the red zone. You know, they maybe drew up a few things that were easier for him to execute or as an offense to execute. And, you know, I thought he did fine. I mean, this game wasn't on him. This game was on the defense really in the first half. I don't think they were kind of playing against two teams a little bit, a desperate team at home, like Josh said, and they were also playing against the officials a little bit. You know, I can't hang this on Wentz too much. One thing to note, I don't believe Nigel Bradham, who had some legal troubles, I don't think he played in the first half. And I think that was exploited a little bit, you know, a little bit with Theo Reddick coming out of the backfield. You know, I think he caught 2 touchdown passes, and, you know, maybe if Bradham was in there covering him, it would have been a different story. So that might be a subplot, a sub-story that comes out of this as we, you know, go a little further into the week and read stories about the game tomorrow and later this evening. But I don't believe he played in the first half. And, you know, you can't lay it all that one guy's not in there. But when you have a unit, the defensive unit, that's kind of clicking on all cylinders, and you remove one cylinder from that, you know, and it's a cylinder who, you know, is familiar with Jim Schwartz's defense, and, you know, maybe, you know, was a key guy to have on the field the first 3 games, just from a mental standpoint, you know, and maybe calling things out that they see, you know, based on the defense and based on what the offense is doing. You know, maybe that made a difference in the first half, because it's really inexplicable to me how they were just, you know, how Detroit just went through them 3 times like that. You know, I expected it once. After I saw it a second, third time, it really was mind-blowing. So, but the Bradham thing's another thing that we, you know, and, you know, I understand the message they have to send to him and to the rest of the team, you know, that they're not going to tolerate certain things, but it certainly hurt them on the field.
Yeah, and they did not tackle well, no matter who was out there. The Eagles, generally, especially in the first half, did not tackle well. Theo Reddick, we have to remember, is their third-string running back.
Right.
And the Eagles don't not tackle well. And, in fact, on that fourth down play where the Lions went for one of those drives, I mean, the Eagles really had him behind the line of scrimmage. He fought through and got up to the first down. Josh, last thing on the Eagles, I mean, and you brought it up, so I'll bring it back to you. You sort of alluded to, you know, well, it's only, you know, it's early in the season, 3-1 still, and certainly that's a positive way to look at it. But you also brought up their future schedule. You know, this is a tough stretch. They come out of this bye at Detroit. They're at Washington next week. Washington's won 3 in a row. They didn't score a lot of points today, but, you know, they did win on the road, their 3rd win in a row. Come home to face the Vikings, who are currently undefeated. Back on the road to face the Cowboys, who are obliterating the Bengals today. Last time I looked, it was 28-0. And then at the Giants. So this is a pretty crucial stretch with 4 out of 5 games on the road. After today, how do you feel about that?
It's definitely going to be a tough trip. I mean, I think this game is a wake-up call. I think maybe they were smelling themselves a little bit. You know, you would hope they weren't. You'd hope Doug Peterson was, you know, trying to keep them under control and keep them even keel and balanced. But the whole city was, you know, going nuts, you know, about this team, talking about Super Bowl or you know, something like that. But after the 3-0 start and after just destroying Pittsburgh, who is considered a contender, you know, this year for sure. And Pittsburgh has looked great the past couple weeks. So it's obviously that was a huge win for them. But I think for sure this was just a letdown game. You see this all the time in the NFL where a team that, you know, a team that's expected to win doesn't win. There's upsets all the time. And coming off the bye, the Eagles, you know, had a couple weeks of kind of the momentum, I think, went down. I think it's ridiculous to have the bye after only three games. I think at the minimum it should be after four games, but that's a story for another day. But anyway, I think it is a tough stretch, as you mentioned, and I think that whether they won or lost this game, you know, it's a close game. I don't know if I would feel any differently about it. I think it's a tough stretch of games, but I think they, you mentioned four out of five on the road, if they can come out of it 3-2, I think that would bode very well, and that would put them at 6-3 at a little more than the halfway point in the season. So I think it's very possible that they could be 3-2 and be 6-3. So that would put them in a good position. But at the same time, it's very possible they could go, you know, 1-4 or 2-3 in these next five games. But if I had to put a win right, I think they're playing very well. And I think the defense, Gordon mentioned, really let them down in the first half. But they played great in the second half. And actually, almost predicted exactly what was going to happen. I said that if they could hold, I thought they were going to hold Detroit to 3 points and win this game. I think I said 27-24 or something like that. So they would have got that touchdown there instead of the field goal. That might have almost exactly the same thing would have happened. But unfortunately, it didn't work out that way, and they do get the loss. But hopefully it'll be a learning experience. And Carson Wentz is a rookie quarterback, and he played really well. It's not on him, as Gordon said. He played really well, so that's a good sign. And they did have a couple drop passes again. So hopefully they'll learn from it, and the defense will learn that, you know, they can't have a first half like that and expect to win, get down by 14 points twice. They were down 15-0 and 21-7. So, but if they were to come back and win this game, that would have been a really defining moment for Carson Wentz and for the whole team. Unfortunately, they don't, but they did face adversity, and I think that would bode well for them over these next five games.
Okay, I appreciate that. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens as they come up here. But certainly, it's a difficult stretch, and we'll see if it was just the thing. I guess my one thought here is that on that schedule, is that when I look at that schedule, if you ask me to rank the games, this was the most winnable game there of the next five, and actually of the next nine. So this was sort of I thought they needed this win, but we'll see what happens. You can never tell week to week. All right, let's switch gears to the Flyers, who kick off their season this coming Friday night. They start with three road games. It's going to be tough to follow for a lot of people. They start at L.A. at 10:30 at night on Friday. They play Arizona at 9 o'clock on Saturday, and then Blackhawks before they finally do come home. So it's a three-game West Coast trip to start the season. Gordon? It's a general point, and we'll get more into specifics. What's your general feeling on the Flyers this year? They kind of surprised some people by making the playoffs last year. What are expectations for this team this year?
Well, I always feel like if you make the playoffs one year and you really haven't flipped over your roster too much, which they really haven't. I mean, I guess we're talking about how they're going to replace R.J. Umberger's two goals in the lineup, really. So it's a lot of the same guys, a lot of the same key guys. You know, you can say a guy like Voracek, who's one of their major players, is coming off a real down year. So, you know, in that sense, you're talking about one of your top weapons can maybe, you know, play more up to his level. There's no reason not to expect them to be a playoff team again. Do I think they're a cup contender? Probably not. But I expect the progress that we saw to continue. And I would expect them to make the playoffs, and you know, they do have a good pair of goaltenders, and once you make the playoffs, maybe you steal a series. So, I mean, that's kind of what I'm looking at right now. Long season, a lot can happen. They're going into the season not really healthy. You know, Delzato was Michael Delzato, the defenseman, was out last year for a long stretch, and now he's going to miss, you know, 4 or 5 weeks to start this season, and a couple other guys that aren't as major are hurt as well. And you know, this is you know, it's not a good way to start. You like to be able to pick and choose your best guys to start a season with. But, you know, I don't see any reason why they can't be just as good, if not a little bit better than they were last year.
Yeah, I'm a little worried. You mentioned the start, not only on the West Coast, but they start with Braden Schenn suspended for 3 games from the hit last year with T.J. Oshie in the playoffs. I think it's likely that they're going to start without Radko Gudas. He didn't get suspended for his hit Monday against Jimmy Vesey from the Rangers, but I think he is going to get suspended for his hit against the Bruins last night. Yesterday. It was last night. Unless Brandon Manning's not back from his little shoulder injury, I think it's a shoulder, upper body injury, excuse me, but if he's not back from that by Friday, now he might be, you know, they're going to have to call up a defenseman, which is, and they're already sort of in a salary cap mess up, you know, situation with Scott Laughton. They can't send him down because he's hurt. So, and I think he was going to get sent down, and they can't send him down, so they got his salary on there. On the other hand, they can use Delzato, long-term injury starting Tuesday, so they might send somebody down. I think they sent Jordan Wheel down today, but once they can put Delzato on the long-term injury reserve, I think they can bring somebody else back. Josh, what are your expectations for the Flyers this season?
I'm kind of right on board with a lot of stuff that Gordon was saying. I think that they're going to be a little bit improved. It's Dave Haxtell's second season as the coach. It's Ron Hextall. He's in there. He's a little bit more seasoned now as well as the GM. So they got a little bit more experience. And I think that they're going to take a step forward. I could see them possibly winning a playoff series, as Gordon mentioned, if you get a hot goaltender or something along those lines. And I think that they're going to be a little bit better than last year. You're not a cup contender, but a little bit better. And hopefully some of their young guys can really impress and play well. And I think that you have reason to be optimistic about this team.
Good. You said, Josh, you set me up for my transition. I was going to ask Gordon, because I know Gordon was looking forward to this. And again, we won't know the first roster until Tuesday. And I guess, as I said, there's some room for maneuvering even after that. But Gordon, you have to be happy that Ivan Provorov, and it looks like Travis Konechny, is going to be on this team to start the season.
Yeah, I mean, you have to go with your most talented guys, and I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, Konechny is one of your top, you know, when you can't, I guess, when you keep 13, 14 forwards on a roster, I'm sure he's among the most talented. You know, he's maybe not in the top 3, 4, or 5 guys, but he's more talented than some of the other guys that were going to make the team toward the bottom of that, and he's a young guy with a big upside, and I guess that's more of the surprise. I don't think we pretty much expected Provorov. The only reason that he wouldn't make it, because they have that glut of defensemen, and maybe if they didn't have the injury issues and the suspension issue with Gudas, then maybe they would have had more of a tough decision to make with Provorov, but now they don't, and really sending him back to juniors, since, you know, playing for the Phantoms is not an option. I had to explain that to some guys today when I was watching the Eagles game, that, you know, he can't play for the Phantoms. He still has 1 year of junior hockey eligibility left. And sending him back to juniors, I mean, yeah, he was dominant before. I mean, he would have been unbelievably dominant, and, you know, but he's also, you know, a target. I mean, junior hockey is very physical, very rough, take no prisoners, and, you know, for a guy like that, all he would have is a target on his back, and how much better would he get as a player at that point? So we need him here, and I'm going to make a bold prediction, Eric. We got so excited about Shane Gostisbehere last year, and he had a terrific rookie year, and he was a finalist, you know, for the Calder Trophy, and the Flyers have never had, you know, anybody win Rookie of the Year before. But I think, you know, if anybody can do it, he might be the guy, and he may end up being, you know, a better long-term defenseman both ways, more physical than Ghost is, and I'm a big fan of Ghost. So we'll just see how it goes. I don't want to put a lot of pressure on or jinx him for this season, but I think he's a real exciting player, and I think Konechny will be a real nice player. Whether he'll be that this year, I don't know. Maybe more of a role player type guy, but I think long-term Konechny's going to be a real nice, you know, 25-goal-a-year at least type player for them as well.
Yeah, no pressure at all. You just said he should win Rookie of the Year. That's not a bad thing.
Well,
okay.
Somebody's got to win Rookie of the Year, right?
we should point out, Konechny's in the same boat in that he's a 19-year-old.
Correct.
Can't be sent to the Phantoms. Right? So, and they do have that thing where they can play them the first nine games, and they have nine games to send them back, but I don't think they want to do that. And one of the things, for people who, I don't know how close people follow preseason hockey, I do, one of the things that Dave Haxtell's done is played Konechny on different lines. So he's played him up with, you know, Couturier and Voracek, and even a little bit on the power play unit in preparation for Shen's suspension. But he's also worked him down in with the third and fourth lines. And like I said, you know, because if he's not on the top six, you want to see if he's going to be valuable. And I think he has been. I think he's earned that spot. Josh, just what's something, I don't know if it's you want to call it a key to the season or something that you think the Flyers' success will depend on, whether it's an individual player or something in general. What's a key for them this season, something you want to see, which will be a positive sign if it happens?
I think Claude Giroux has got to step it up. I mean, he had a couple years ago, he was considered a top five player probably in all of hockey, and he kind of has gone a little bit downhill since then. I think, not completely downhill. He's still been productive, but I think he's got to step it up. I think he's a guy that he's got to really be a leader of this team and really take that captain role and run with it. And hopefully some of the younger guys can help him perform better as well. But I think a key to the season will be how well Claude Giroux plays. I think he's the leader of the team, and he's still a younger guy himself. He's been around a little bit, but he's still relatively young, you know, so he's got some years under him, but he also isn't too old that he can't contribute, obviously. So I think Claude Giroux is a big key for them this season.
Thank you, Josh. Gordon, how about you? Same thing.
I would put it on, you know, I would name two guys. Drew is obviously a key one, because we still don't know. Is he a superstar or is he just a star? Is he very good? Is he good? And if he's just good, and that's okay. The supporting cast, and I mentioned Jake Voracek before, and Wayne Simmons and Braden Schenn, you know, there was a lot of discussion, should they re-sign him, not re-sign him, and you know how I feel. I feel strongly about him as a player. I think he has a lot of upside. The supporting cast around Giroux, some of those guys I mentioned are important. You don't want Shane Gospisbehere, and I don't think it's in his makeup, but you don't want him to have that sort of sophomore jinx, kind of everything went his way last year. So he's another guy. Because I think they're going to expect him more. You know, last year he played on all the power plays, but he was really like a third pairing guy defensively. And they might want a little bit more out of him defensively. They want him to play, you know, second pairing type minutes when you're not on a power play. So I like to see him not stagnate and not drift back. I like to see him continue to get better.
I'm going to go. It's related to that, and maybe it might not seem like it's related at first, but the penalty kill was not very good last year, and it really needs to be better. And, they went out and picked up Boyd Gordon for that purpose. And one of the things he does is he's a right-handed draw. So what that might do, if it works out, is it will limit Claude Giroux's time shorthanded. Now, he'll still play some shorthanded, and he's dangerous there because he's scoring the other end, and he's a good defensive player. But if they can limit Giroux a little bit so he's not playing power play, you know, a lot of shorthanded time, you know, obviously 5-on-5, then maybe he will be a little fresher to play better at the offensive end and do some other things. So if they can shore up that shorthanded, I don't know if Chris Vandevelde is even going to make the team. Belmar was not very good on the draw, although he had a really good World Cup, apparently. I only saw one game with him, but he played really well in the World Cup. You know, if they can get those guys going and Couturier back there, but Gordon, especially as a right-handed draw, will take some of that pressure off Giroux. Giroux always had to go back out there to take that right-handed draw in his own zone, and maybe now he won't have to. The other thing I think a storyline to watch is, and this is for the whole league, but for the Flyers, with Mason and Neuwirth both playing pretty well last season and looks like they're, you know, good tandem this year. But with that expansion draft coming up with the Las Vegas team, you won't be able to protect both goalies. So, you know, it could be a case where at the trade deadline, they might just say, look, we can, you know, this is the guy we're going to re-sign. We're going to trade the other one because otherwise you take risk of losing them for almost nothing in that expansion draft. So that is something else to watch. We're going to do the Sixers on the other side. I'm with you guys on the Flyers. I think they're going to make the playoffs again. I think they might give a team a better run for the money. Not that they didn't give the Capitals a good run. They made it a tough series, but the Flyers couldn't score. I think you'll see more scoring this year and hopefully be better. So check out PhillyFanatics.com. We've got our story up there, Lions slay Eagles, which we didn't even get into Darius Slay, and lots of other good stuff, more good stuff coming. So check us out next week. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you on the other side. All right. Let's move on to we're in the archive here. Let's look at the Sixers, who played their first preseason games this week, and I don't care what the score is, but we're really looking at two guys right now, especially with Okafor and Noel sidelined. Okafor hasn't played yet, and Noel only played the first game. What did you think of Joel Embiid and Darius Saric this week?
I was pretty impressed with Embiid. I didn't get to see. I saw some of the. I didn't get to see the whole game. I saw some of the game against the Celtics, and I didn't know that Embiid could shoot the three. Actually, he stepped out and shot the three, and he's really big. He's 7'2", I think, and he can really do a little bit of everything. He can back to the basket. He can shoot the three. He can have post up moves. He can shoot the mid range jump shot. So I think that you're going to see big things from Embiid. No pun intended there. He's a big guy, but I didn't get to see as much as Saric, so you know maybe you guys can fill me on how what you thought about him. But I was really impressed with Embiid, and I think you know it's a good sign going forward.
Okay, Gordon, you think Saric?
Yes, think Saric. I think Saric has played really well. He's composed on the court. He hits the jumper. He does a lot of that point forward stuff. Maybe not as highlight reel exciting as Ben Simmons would have or will eventually. But and he's tough inside. He'll grab a rebound. And I think everything we've seen from Saric has been positive. And the thing about him, you know, he's played in Europe for a couple of years, and at the time it was kind of a drag because we wanted to see him play, and we found out right after they drafted him and that he signed in Turkey for 3 years, and but the thing is, he ended up coming over here after 2 years. You have a little bit more of a finished product than you get from your normal rookie. A lot of these guys come out and they're super talented guys, but they've only played maybe 1 year of college basketball. I mean, that's how dysfunctional the whole system is now. That you have guys that pretty much go to college for 1 year, like an apprenticeship for the NBA, knowing they're going out in the NBA. I just looked at a mock draft for next year's draft, and basically the top eight of the top 10 picks, I think, are. Incoming freshman, here's a guy who's pretty much going to be like what we used to see, a guy who played maybe 3 or 4 years of college basketball and is a lot more finished product as a rookie. And I think that's, and maybe if there is a blessing in disguise with the Simmons injury, you never want to see a guy get hurt, especially with when so much of the future is invested in him, is that I think it's going to be more consistent playing time for Saric out of the gate. And then maybe when Simmons does come back, you have a deeper, more effective team because of it. So, he's been really good. I mean, he's done some good things.
Yeah, he didn't shoot well last night, but he's. I think what we'll see with him is versatility. As I think you alluded to it, he'll grab some rebounds, he'll get some assists. You might not see him with 10 assists or 12 rebounds or 25 points, but I think we're going to see a lot of him with 16 points and 6 rebounds and 4 assists. I think we'll see a lot of that, which is good. I'm happy. I'm pleased with that. I think that. There's still some question, not on his determination, but on his foot speed defensively, and that'll depend on who he's matched up against. But, I was encouraged by both guys. Embiid picked up too many fouls and 4 fouls in 13 minutes, and, he too many turnovers in the limited amount of time he plays. But, he hasn't played in 3 years, 2.5 years, I guess. So I think that's to be expected to see some rust that way. And we'll see what happens. But at least the Sixers have some pieces to build. I still don't know how the pieces are going to fit, but we'll see that when Okafor and Noel actually get on the court with Embiid more. That brings us to – I do want to point out, just so people know, I don't want to pat myself on the back with how dedicated we are here at PhillyFanatics.com. I did have my mom up at hospital for special surgery this week on the lookout for Ben Simmons on Wednesday. And the surgery was on Tuesday, but she did not spot him. And she was up there, and I told her to keep a lookout. She said, "How will I know who he is?" And I said, you'll know. I said, you'll know. It's the really big guy with the foot, with his foot in a cast. But she did not see him. But anyway, let's move on to final thoughts. Josh, you lead off for us.
All right, I'm going to go back to football, and I've talked about it before on the show as one of my final thoughts, and I'm going to talk about it again here early on in the season, the wild and wacky NFC East. I think it's the most, I might be a little bit biased because the Eagles are in that division, but I think it's the most intriguing division in all of football and has been for like the last 10, 12 years. No other division, I believe, has had this feat, and that's that no team has won back-to-back NFC East titles since the Eagles did it in 2003 and 2004. So that means since 2004, there's been a different team to win the division every single year. So Washington started out 0-2. They're now 3-2. They won the division, of course, last year. They're putting themselves in a little bit better position. I picked the Giants to win the division before the season, the Eagles to go 6-10. And the Eagles are off to a 3-1 start. The Cowboys are crushing the Bengals, as you mentioned. They could go to 4-1 potentially on the season, most likely. So really it's up in the air. It could be anyone's division. I think the Giants, actually, if I had to rank who has the best chance or the worst chance to win the division, I would actually say the Giants have the worst chance to win the division right now, because they're going to play the Packers tonight, and I believe they're going to lose that game and they'll have a losing record. So I think the Giants, out of the four teams, the least chance to win the division between the Eagles, Redskins, and Cowboys. So I think it's just a very intriguing division, and you never know what's going to happen. You don't know which team is going to win the division from year to year. The Eagles play the Cowboys on New Year's Day, January 1st, the last game of the season. Could that be the game that determines who wins the division? Maybe it could be. So, and also the Cowboys will have a really interesting decision to make when Tony Romo comes back. Do they want to stick with their rookie quarterback who's played so well, or do they want to bring back Tony Romo in? And last year he came back in and he got hurt again. So we'll see what happens there. It should be really interesting. And the Eagles play the Cowboys, as you mentioned, coming up not too far in the distant future. So I just think the NFC East is a very intriguing division, and I'm looking forward to see what happens the rest of the season.
Yeah, and it's probably a better division than people gave it credit for before the year. We talked about how mediocre it is, and maybe it's not as bad as we thought it was. And that Cowboys game is October 30th, and some people have targeted that for Romo's return game, Josh. So we'll see what happens, if they continue to be on a roll if they stick with Prescott. The Bengals have cut that in half. Now, those listening to the archive already know the result, but it's 28-14 now, just a couple minutes left. Gordon, your final thought?
Yeah, I'm going to kind of piggyback on what Josh said and also kind of disagree slightly with something that Josh said earlier in the show. I think you're kind of might be on board with this as well and some of the things you said. I think this is a really bad loss today. I it's kind of a tendency, if it's early in the season, we kind of say, oh, well, they have a lot of time to make it up. But every game counts, whether it's in September, October, or November, or December. I mean, they all count the same in the standings. And you look back on a game you could have won, and, a game that you could have and should have won in December is the same as a game that you could have and should have won, earlier in the season, here in October. So, I think this was a game there was Detroit was, I know they're a desperate team and they're playing at home, and I know you can't win them all. But when a game's winnable, I know the question was asked earlier, what's worse, a blowout loss or a narrow loss? And I've lived through these losses. This is Groundhog Day for me. I mean, I've lived through these losses a long time, and they don't get any easier. And I know the impact that they have. I know that when you get to the end of the season and you sort out who wins a division and who possibly gets a wild card, these are the games that come back to haunt you a lot of times. I mean, they lost Chip Kelly's second year when they also went 10-6 and didn't make the playoffs. They lost a game in Arizona that they should have won. If Chip Kelly had challenged a spot on a play with Chris Polk at the goal line where he possibly scored a touchdown but at the least had gotten a first down, which would have set him up for a first and goal, they would have won that game. They ended up losing that game, and guess what? They didn't win the division that year, but they would have gone as a wild card, and instead, guess who won as a wild card? Arizona did. These things do matter early in the season. There was a game in San Francisco where they went up 21-0. I believe they got like a punt return for a touchdown, a block kick for a touchdown, an interception return for a touchdown, and went up 21-0 without moving the ball the whole game. And he ended up losing in San Francisco, and that game also hurt them that season. So, and that's recent history. I mean, I could I could go back way back in the annals of bitter losses, and some early in the season, some are middle of the season, some are at the end of the season, that cost you when it cost you maybe a playoff spot, maybe it cost you a division, and maybe it cost you just home field, playing at home field in the playoffs. But every game counts, and you don't want to just kind of shrug it off and say, oh, well, when you're winning, you had a chance to win a game that there was really no excuse not to win because it was right there. And one last thing about today, I know I talked about, you know, that bomb and you can't take it back, but it would have been nice to see how Carson Wentz, you know, we were joking watching the game that, well, we're either going to see him throw his first career interception or we're going to see him, you know, direct his first game-winning drive. And I would have liked to have seen the latter just to see how it worked out, whether they got downfield in a field goal position or not. I would rather have seen, you know, him work the guys, you know, Sproles, Ertz, you know, Jordan Matthews. I'm not mentioning those three because they just happen to be on my fantasy team. But, you know, it would have been a little better to see that than, you know, what ended up happening. And so it's a bitter loss. It's a bitter pill to swallow. And like you said, they got a tough stretch coming up, and you want to grab every win you can when you can get it. And this would have done a lot for the team confidence-wise. And you know, like I said, I've lived through this loss before, and I'll live through it again. But it is Groundhog Day, but it doesn't get any easier. And you know, just from a lifetime of experience, just because it's earlier in the season doesn't mean it's not going to come back to haunt you.
Gordon, proving that Eagles fans do not forget. you went through a I thought you were going to go back to that 13-11 loss to the Lions in 1985 or whatever it was, but they weren't going to the playoffs that year anyway, so I think that's
right.
A good example. Maybe the worst game I've ever sat through. And I didn't forget it. It's 30 years ago, so maybe we don't forget. I do want to just go back to that schedule again, since you brought it up and we've been talking about this. And I brought this up last week when we talked about, you know, revising our predictions for the season, and I upgraded by three games, but I looked at that schedule, and I'm looking at I did four out of five. If we go out further, there are nine games after the bye. There are three home games in nine games, and those three home games are against the Vikings, who are undefeated, the Falcons, who knocked the Broncos off the undefeated perch today, which leaves the Vikings as the only undefeated team in the NFL, and their other home game in that stretch is against the Packers. Road games, Lions, Redskins, Cowboys, Giants, Seahawks and Bengals. I mean, that's a rough stretch. So if they do well, we'll look back and we'll go, hey, Josh was right. You know, it was an early season loss. It's not that big a deal. But if they don't win, you know, more than a couple of those games, we might look back and go, boy, that Detroit game was a lost opportunity. I'm going to shift to the Flyers, and we've talked about them. But, you know, one thing they've had problems with in recent years is early season. They've got off to slow starts. Some individual players like Giroux, Voracek, Couturier's, from a goal-scoring standpoint, off to slow starts. So you really want to see them get off to a good start this year. And you figure with Dave Haxtell back for a second year, you know, they're in the same system, they know the system. I have an uneasy feeling about the start, at least for the first five to ten games. They've played a lot of playoff teams from last year. They started off with three road games back-to-back, the Kings and Arizona on back-to-back nights to start the season. Delzato's hurt. I think Gudas is going to be suspended. Maybe for five games, as a repeat offender. You know, if Manning's not back, they're going to have to call up a defenseman. I don't like this start. I have a bad feeling about the start. I think they'll recover okay, but I just have a bad feeling. And, you know, and because they've had other bad starts, I just have you don't want it to pile up. You don't want to say, oh God, here we go again. You don't want that feeling to start the season. You want to start on a positive note. And I'm just worried they're not going to start on a very positive note. So I hate to end on a downer note, but hey, it's pretty downer Sunday with the Eagles loss anyway. So that's it. Anybody have anything they want to add in the next 30 seconds?
No, I would just say, you know, with the Flyers, I guess one silver lining is they're playing some tough teams early on the road. You know, we talk about Los Angeles, Chicago. Maybe it's better to get them earlier in the season. Maybe they're not in their full stride either as well. So that might be a saving grace there.
There's the silver lining. Okay, so like I said, check out PhillyFanatics.com. Go ahead, Josh. I'm sorry, quickly, though.
Yeah. Just real quick, to end on a positive note, I think if they can beat Pittsburgh, they can really beat anyone in the NFL. So I'll end on that positive note.
There you go. I don't know if it's talking about the Flyers or the Eagles, but it's apropos for either one. And that's it for the show. Like I said, check out our PhillyFanatics.com, Eagles, Lions slay Eagles. lots of other good stuff up on their columns, stories. We're going to put up the Flyers prediction spot there for you to predict how they're going to do the season. Thank you for listening. That's it for this week's show. We'll talk to you next week after the Redskins-Eagles games. For Josh Landsberg, Gordon Glantz, I am Eric Fisher. Have a great week, everybody.